So thank you very much for the introduction. My name is Li Zhuang. I'm from Microsoft Research Silicon Valley. Today I'm going to talk about Nectar, automatic management of data and computation in data centers. This is a joint work with many of my colleagues at Microsoft Research Silicon Valley, also one of our great interns from MIT. So today I'm going to talk about how to cache computation result and manage storage in a data center. So this is a data center. There are many, many servers in this data center. A large amount of data are stored in this data center. So many data sets are very large. They could be across multiple machines or even all machines in this data center. And we have many users sending programs to be executed in a data center. Those programs will compute on data set stored in the data center and then generate some new results. The new result will be stored in the data center as well. In our past experience with data center, we found there are some problems with resource management. So resources are poorly managed in data centers. There are two representative problems. The first one is that a large fraction of computation is redundant. We did a study in some production clusters within Microsoft, and we found that typically there are 20 to 40% of computation are redundant in a data center in our study. And another problem is we found that a large portion of storage is occupied by either not obsolete or seldom used data sets. We started our research data center. We found that over 50% of the space was occupied by data set that was never used in the past months. So this raised some alert to us. First of all, I want to give you some example to show what is a redundant computation. In this example, I will use the click log as a example. So a click log is a log that records clicks that a user clicked when user issued some search query. So in a data center, we found multiple programs work on this click log. They share a common step that is passing and pre-processing on the click log. And after that, each individual program will use the result of this pre-processing step to do some individual computation. However, this common step was executed many times in the data center because those programs could be written by different developers. So we call this problem a shared computation problem. Another issue is the incremental computation. The click log is added daily with some incremental updates. We see the same program computes on sliding window over this log again and again each day. So there are overlapped data sets among different days. We call this redundant computation for the incremental computation. So this is the problem with computation. Then what's the problem with the storage? We have already said there are obsolete or unused data sets in data center. So let's take a look at our research data center. This is the CDF graph of last accessed time for the data files on this data on this cluster. The total storage size is 190 terabytes. We found that over 50% of the data was never accessed in the last 275 days. It could be that this user just generated this data set temporarily and they totally forgot about it. It could be some data set will never be used in the future. So this occupies a huge amount of storage space in data center. So we want to solve these two problems. Here is our solution. So we want to avoid redundant computation and we want to delete obsolete or unused results. To avoid redundant computation, we want to build a system that can transparently reuse previously computed results. To delete obsolete or unused results, we must have a system that can manage the results of all computations. So the system knows which computation is more important and which can be deleted. There is a problem that when some data set is deleted, user may request that data set again in the future. So we must have a way to regenerate the data set if needed. So till now, I introduced the problem we want to solve and some of the high-level solutions. In the next couple of slides, I will talk about the overall architecture of Lecta, and then we will dive into the details of the system. Finally, I will talk about some evaluation result of the system. So before talking about the Lecta architecture, let me give you some context about where the system executes. So when user wants to do some computation in a data center, it writes a link program. A link program is very similar to SQL. It has a set of operators. And an interesting thing about these operators, here we show in blue, is that user can provide one or multiple user-defined function. So user can specify the execution logic for each operator. So this is a program works on a click log. The purpose of this program is to generate the the top five clicked links that for each query. So this is a link program, and the link program is sent to a compiler called ZyadLink. The ZyadLink will generate a distributed execution plan. This distributed execution plan is then sent to a distributed execution engine called Zyad here. And Zyad will execute this program, the plan, and store the result in a distributed file system. Here we use an in-house made file system called the TidyFS. This is just a conventional distributed file system. So we have fault tolerance with replication and many other features that are typical to a file system. So here the modules shown in the blue background are located in the data center. So what does Lecta do? Lecta basically inserts a couple of components into the architecture we just showed. Two most important components are the Lecta client-side library and the Lecta cluster-wide services. Let me go over some high-level idea in this Lecta architecture. So when Lecta receives a ZyadLink program, it will use this program to look up the cache server to see if there are any previous computation I can use for this this new computation, so I can save some computation time. If there is such kind of computation can be used, the program rewriter will reuse the computation and then generate a new program called pprime. This pprime is a ZyadLink program, and then send ZyadLink, and ZyadLink compile it into a distributed execution plan. This plan is executed on Zyad. During the execution, Zyad will also insert some new cache entries back to the cache server, so the result of the new computations could be used in the future. The result is stored in the distributed file system. So we have two stores in the file system. One is the program store. I will talk about this later, about how we store the program. And also another is the data store. Lecta provided two services to manage the cache entry and manage the storage space. One is the cache server, and another is garbage collector. These two parts will be discussed in the next a couple of slides. So first of all, let's take a detailed look at the query rewriting, program rewriting. So these are two components related to program rewriting. When the program rewriter gets a ZyadLink program P, it will use this program to look up the cache server. It could be there could be an entry in a cache server that has exactly match of P and also exact match of all its input data set. Then we can claim down. We just return the previous computed result and we get the result we want. But most of the case, we just get partial hits. Partial hits means we found some previous computation that shared the computation with this program P, or some previous computation just have overlapped the data sets with this P. Then we have multiple hits. The program rewriter will use all these hits to generate multiple new program and select the one with the largest saving. So here saving means the computation time can be saved by reusing the cached result. And program rewriter generate a new program P prime and send to ZyadLink for compile and then send it to Zyad to execute. So to summarize, the program rewriter will decide how to reuse cached result. I want to use an example in the next slide to explain this point. Another thing program rewriter also decide is how to create new cache entries. So the program writer will mark multiple places in the new program P prime and say, please insert a new cache entry here. So new cache entry will be inserted there. So now I'm going to give you an example. Basically, this is a map reduce program written in Link. You can think the first select as the mapper, and then the second select as the reducer. The goodbye is actually equivalent to the merge source stage in the reduce stage of map reduce. Assume we have a query rewriting plan that we think x dot select dot goodbye is a very popular common subcomputation. So we have already decided we want to insert a cache entry for the result of goodbye. The final result r is always inserted into the cache and inserted into cache server as a cache entry. Now we have new updates to this data set. So we have x prime appended to x. And we still want to compute the same program on x plus x prime. And then the program rewriter will find the first two operators actually got a cache hit on the data set x. So the program rewriter will use the cached result t to replace x dot select dot goodbye. And also generate an incremental computation, which is x prime dot select dot goodbye. So program rewriter will use a new operator called merge group to merge in the previously cached result with some new computation. And then the result of merge group will continue to the select stage and the output to the final result. So this example will show we can save the computation time of x dot select dot goodbye by reusing the cached result. This could be very useful in some case because most of the time x could be really large and the incremental computation x prime could be really small. So we could save a huge amount of time by reusing cached result. Now I have a talk about how to reuse computation by using cache entries. Next, I'm going to talk about some how to manage and derive the data set. So in our data center, we divide our data into the primary data set and derived data set. Primary data set are those data set imported from the external sources. For example, like web pages crawled from the internet, the click logs or query logs or many data like in this type. The derived data set is the data set generated by computation. Here we have the distributed file system. There are three spaces in this file system. One is the program store, another is the user space, and the last one is the data store. So when a program is sent to a Nectar client, there is a function called to table, and then there is a user space pass provided to to table, which is mic/foo.pt. So Nectar we'll combine this to P prime and send this to ZoyaLink. ZoyaLink then combine this into a distributed execution plan, P double prime. The P double prime will be sent to Zoya for execution. In the meantime, this P double prime will be stored in the program store. The program store will also maintain an index from fingerprint to P double prime. So here, fingerprint is a combination of program fingerprint and also data fingerprint. To generate the program fingerprint, we did a static analysis over the code that can be reached from the original link expression. And then we fingerprint all the code reachable from the link expression. For the data fingerprint, we just directly fingerprint the data content. So here, FP is a combination of both program and the data fingerprint. So now the trial link will execute the program, and it generates a file mic/foo.pt in the user space. The content is only in the fingerprint. So this is very similar to a symbolic link for this foo.pt file. And then the actual data file is stored in a data store with a random generated file name. There is an entry from fingerprint pointed to the file in the data store inserted in a cache server. So in this way, we generated a derived data set called mic/foo.pt. Then how can we access this file later? To access this file, a program will call get table and provide an appends in the user space. Thread link will then read mic-flutterpt from the user space and get a fingerprint. Use this fingerprint to look up the cache server. Cache server then provide back the actual data file in the data store, and the thread link will read the file from the data store. So the problem is, so what if we have already deleted this file from the data store because of garbage collection or because we are out of disk space? So the program still wants to get the content of this table sometime in the future and then provide the mic-flutterpt. So thread link then will read the mic-flutterpt, get a fingerprint. Use this fingerprint to look up the cache server. Cache server would say, I don't have this entry anymore. So thread link will look up the program store. The program store will provide the program that can be used to regenerate this file. The program is then sent to Dryad for execution. After the program is executed, it will generate a new file, generate a file with a new name, and then an entry will be restored in a cache server, still from the fingerprint to fingerprint to the new data file. So in this way, even if we delete some derived data set, and this data set is requested in the future, user can still access this file by rerun the program. So now I talk about how to reuse computation and how to manage the derived data set. Then I'm going to talk about cache server. So all this derived data set has some entries in a cache server. So in our implementation, we use a SQL database to keep cache server. To keep cache entries. It is worth notice that all the data files are actually stored in a distributed file system, TidyFS. So the SQL Server database is just used to keep the cache entries. We store some useful information along with cache entry. One is the usage statistics. So the usage statistics record each use of the cache entry when the cache entry is used by the program rewriter to generate some new result. We also keep some lookup statistics. So lookup statistics shows how popular a program is, and then we know whether we should insert new cache entry for this program. Of course, some other information such as the result URI is also stored along with the cache entry. The cache server has been used to serve the program rewriter to give program rewriter about which previous computed result can be reused in a new computation. It also used to serve a garbage collector to let garbage collector know which data file can be deleted. So there are two policies associated with cache server. One is the insertion policy, another is the deletion policy. The insertion policy decides when we add new entries to cache server. We always add the final result to cache server because we get this for free. For subcomputation, we have two criteria. When a popularity of a query exceeds a threshold, that means when a subcomputation is popular enough, and also the saving from caching this popular enough computation exceeds a threshold, we will insert a cache entry about this subcomputation. The deletion policy will delete the cache entry with the least value. So the value of cache entry is computed based on these four parameters. The first parameter is the size of the result. That's the disk space taken by this cache entry. So this is a cost. And the second parameter is the cumulative execution time in order to get this result. So this is the saving we can get if we reuse this cache entry. The last two parameters are the last time it was used and the number of times it was used. It shows how frequently this cache entry was used and whether they are popular enough. So after the cache entry is deleted in a cache server, there are some dangling data files in the data store. So we need to garbage collect these dangling files. So we have this garbage collector. The garbage collector uses mark and sweep algorithms. So the garbage collector first do a reachability analysis and then delete all dangling data files. But using cache server to select the data sets to delete is not always reliable because of two reasons. One reason is that when some new data set is created in the data store, because of concurrent execution, we might not have enough time to insert cache entry yet. Another is when some new cache entry is inserted, it may has no usage statistic because it just get inserted in a cache server. So we use leases to protect such new data sets. So now I've almost finished the details of the most important components in Nectar system. Next, I'm going to move to the evaluation section. So the evaluation includes two parts. One is analyze of logs from the production server. We use the logs from a 3 month period collected on 25 Microsoft production clusters. We found 36,000 jobs. So these jobs are very similar to Jaya Link programs. They have similar program, similar grammars. And we analyze all these programs and then extracted the computations from the programs. So we finally simulated the effects of caching. So this graph shows whether cache helps. The x-axis is the name of clusters from C1 to C25. The y-axis is the fraction of jobs benefit from caching. We see that on 8 clusters, there are over 50 jobs can benefited by using caching. Overall, 25% of jobs can benefit from caching. So this is pretty impressive. We also did a set of controlled evaluation on our research cluster. So we have a working prototype deployed on a 240-node research cluster. Here I want to show example of two examples. These two examples will use two data sets. One is the collection of web document, which is about 1 terabyte in size. Another is a sample of 5 days click log. The first example is about sub-computation. So we have 4 programs. These 4 programs all analyze different statistics about the Word document. The computation of the first program actually shared by the rest 3 programs. So the first program is some parsing and pre-analyzing of the documents. We see that by sharing the cached result from the first program, the rest of 3 program can significantly benefit from the cumulation machine time. It can save as much as 99% of cumulative machine time. Another example is on click log. So this example monitor URLs clicked the most for each search phrase, which I have already shown you in the program. So on the 4th day, it works on the data from day 1 to day 4. On the 5th day, it works on the data from day 1 to day 5. We see that the result for the 5th day, we can save as much as 50% computation time. Because the data updated in the 5th day just 20%, so ideally we could achieve 80% of saving time. We didn't achieve this because there are still room for improvement when we combine the previous computation result with the new computation. So finally, I want to use this slide to conclude my talk. We think Nectar is a promising approach to automate and unify management of data and computation in a data center. By using Nectar, we think we can achieve efficient space utilization. We already showed that we can use previous computation, both in the sub-computation and incremental computation. Nectar will also make the management of storage much easier. We can do this because we find a way to treat the program, treat the computation and the data interchangeably. And this concludes my talk. Thank you very much. I will be happy to answer any questions.
David Schultz from MIT. So some people have looked at trends in storage, what with 1 terabyte disks these days and the fact that storage capacity is increasing at about 60% per year, whereas the bandwidth is only increasing at 10%. And they've argued that what really matters, what the precious resources are things like the memory and the I/O bandwidth rather than the actual storage itself. So the first part of the question is, do you find that to be true? in your system? And second, how would you evaluate that kind of trade-off, the trade-off between, say, spending a bunch of I/O bandwidth and resources trying to locate things to throw away versus just leaving the garbage to accumulate? Is it very application dependent?
This is a very good question. So what we try to look at is the resource usage over a period of time. So if you look at each individual program, of course, the I/O or of course the memory will be very important. But if you look at whether you use a data center efficiently, let's say over 1 year, it is very important that user do not waste machine time and do not waste the storage in this data center.
So do you know, have you thought about how you could potentially model this and think about where the optimal trade-off is?
Trade-off between?
So for example, the trade-off between storing something and then potentially redriving or recomputing it later versus deleting something and recomputing it later versus just storing it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
how do you know where you found sort of the optimal point? How often would you run your system, your garbage collector?
Yeah, essentially our system is trying to find a trade-off between storage and actually computation time. So we use more storage to store the previous computed result. For example, we also store some intermediate results, that's the sub-computation. In the return, when we see this computation again, we can save the machine time. So it depends on the storage pressure, so we may have we may need some threshold or some ratio to decide how much a result we want to store on disk so we can save the computation time.
Okay, so you have some heuristic basically that tells you. Okay. Thank you.
Brian Ford, Yale. This will be an obvious, predictable question given my research, recent interests, but how do you know or ensure that all of these computations really do produce the same result each time you execute them? Is that a constraint built into the Dryad Link language, or is it just something you assume is a property of all the applications you care about, did you run into any problems with, you know, applications that actually use random numbers or do different things each time you run them?
Yeah, this is a very good question. We got this questions many times when we discuss the system. So there is assumption about Dryad Link program is that the result is always deterministic. So if the user have a program use random numbers and then the result is different each time, what the next time will do is will always return you the same result. So this is not the problem with Nectar. So it's just Dryad Link enforced that the program must have deterministic result. That's the basic assumption of the system we build on top of.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Micah Brodsky from MIT. I have a sort of devil's advocate meta question. In a certain sense, it seems like this work, but what we've been doing as a community is sort of marching up higher and higher in a database-like stack that is building more and more sophisticated semantics on cloud data operations and more complicated, efficient policies for how to submit and manage the computations and the data, and gradually becoming more sophisticated and more inscrutable also in the performance characteristics and the like. In a certain sense, are we just reinventing distributed databases under different names? And is that where we want to go? Do we actually really want sort of a very similar semantics, or are we aiming for something different?
So we did learn a lot from databases. As I listed here, we learned a lot from the incremental view management and also reuse of materialized view in database. But there are several differences from our work to database. One is we work on a much larger scale compared to previous work in database. Another is let's take an example like a materialized view. So in most database systems, when they manage materialized view, they do not manage multiple versions. So in Nectar, actually, we keep a track of every single version of the if you call it materialized view. So we think like the systems are applied in different areas, and there are some significant difference in the internal design because it applied to different different environment. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, Li Shuang. I'm David Chaikin with Yahoo. I was a system administrator for our disks at MIT about 20 years ago or more, and it seems like a constant of computer sciences that our disks are always 95% full, and we're constantly dealing with that. Just as kind of a follow-up to the last question, but a bit more specific, have you thought about how your techniques for detecting which data sets are redundant or derived from one another, how do those interact with systems that are a bit more explicit about managing the lineage of data sets? And do you think that we could combine some of these detection techniques with systems that are a bit more heterogeneous, that produce data in different kinds of ways, possibly transferring data from cluster to cluster?
So I think the significant difference between Necta and the traditional way of managing the storage is that we maintain the program that can be reused, can be used to regenerate the derived data set. That says if we have already deleted some data set by mistake or something like that, we can always regenerate the data set again. But I also talk about there are a set of data called the primary data set in our system. Right now, what we assume is we will never delete this primary data set. Or I think what you said could also be combined together to help us to manage the primary data set in a data center.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.